Radio Prague News.
People in Need has suspended all of its activities in Afghanistan after 9 local employees were killed in an attack. The mayor of a Prague district has filed a lawsuit over contaminated water. And Czech player Lucia Šafářová has reached the semi-finals of the French Open. The Czech aid organisation People in Need has suspended all of its activities in Afghanistan after 9 of its local employees were killed in an attack on Monday. The NGO has also taken steps to ensure the safety of its staff in Afghanistan in the wake of the attack in the Zari district in the north of the country. The victims included 7 aid workers, 6 men and 1 woman, and 2 guards. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack, but it comes as the Taliban have intensified their annual spring offensive. The mayor of a Prague district in which scores of people had to be taken to hospital after drinking contaminated tap water has filed a lawsuit against an unknown perpetrator for reckless endangerment. Prague 6 Mayor André Kolář said it was necessary to evaluate the entire situation and to draw conclusions that would help prevent a similar situation in future. Thousands of people in the Davidsa and Bubanec districts were without water for days last week after bacteria escaped from a dead-end pipe into the main supply. President Miloš Zeman says government plans to curb the powers of his office are an attempt at revenge on the part of the government's legislation chief, Jiří Dienstbier, who was a failed candidate in the 2013 presidential election. Mr. Zeman made the comments on Czech TV in response to news of proposed changes to the constitution. These include the Senate having to co-sign on appointments to the board of the Czech National Bank and foreign policy becoming the remit of the government alone. Mr. Dienstbier said the main aim of the proposals was to safeguard the country's parliamentary system. Czech player Lucia Šafářová has reached the semi-finals of tennis's French Open. The 28-year-old beat Gabrielle Muguruza of Spain 7-6, 6-3 on Tuesday to set up a clash with Serbia's Ana Ivanovic for a place in the final in Paris. Šafářová had never previously got past the third round at the second Grand Slam of the year. A unique natural burial ground named Forest of Memories has been opened in the Prague district of Jablice. People can bury the ashes of their loved ones under trees at the site, which will not feature headstones. The director of the Prague Cemeteries Administration said it would allow for environmentally friendly burial in a natural environment not reminiscent of a normal cemetery. The Czech films The Snake Brothers and Home Care will compete for the Crystal Globe for Best Film in the official competition at the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival in July, Internet reported on Tuesday. The Snake Brothers has already had cinema distribution, but Home Care will receive its premiere at the festival, which is taking place this year for the 50th time. Helena Treštíková's latest work, Mallory, will compete in Karlovy Vary's documentary competition. Prague's oldest railway bridge, the Negrelli Viaduct, is to undergo renovation, Czech TV has reported. The mid-19th century structure runs over a kilometre from the Masaryk to Bubny train stations via Štvanice Island. A project set to begin in January will involve the replacement of stones, the repair of seams and the renovation of its numerous arches. The viaduct was designed by the pioneering Austrian engineer Alois Negrelli. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, the Russian ambassador has been called to account over 2 new incidents which have soured relations between Prague and Moscow. A memory centre has opened, giving a queer perspective of the past. And we look at how 2 authors have revealed a largely hidden wild side of the Czech capital. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomir Zaorálek summoned the Russian ambassador Sergei Kiselyov to Chernin Palace on Monday for urgent talks following two separate incidents which have cast a fresh shadow over relations between the two countries. The first bone of contention was the revelation of a list last week of 89 EU politicians declared persona non grata in Russia. The list included four prominent Czechs, including Topo 9 chairman Karol Schwarzenberg. The second incident relates to the recent airing of a documentary in Russia, which, critics argue, is seeking to rewrite the history of Soviet military aggression. Dominic Yoon reports.
A military coup was being prepared in Prague. So says the narrator of a documentary aired on the state-owned Russia 1 TV station on May the 23rd, part of a series entitled Warsaw Pact, Pages Declassified, covering the Cold War. The programme's portrayal of the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia in 1968 as saving the country from a NATO-fascist-tinged coup has caused outrage in both the Czech Republic and Slovakia. The documentary comes at a time when relations between the Czech Republic and Vladimir Putin's Russia were already dealt a fresh blow by Russian authorities handing over a list to an EU delegation of 89 politicians from across the EU banned from entering Russia. The list included four Czech politicians accused of being particularly vocal in their support for the 2014 revolution in Ukraine. President Miloš Zeman was among those voicing criticism of the ban, arguing that such measures undermine diplomatic efforts. The airing of the documentary, coupled with the publication of this list, led to Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek summoning the Russian ambassador to the Czech Republic, Sergei Kiselyov, to Chernin Palace on Monday for urgent consultations. Zaorálek later told Czech television the content of these talks.
The main thing I told the ambassador was, how in heaven's name can you be talking about us in this way in Russia? When you look at the film, then you see that it is a kind that propagates a black and white world view. Here is the evil West, and our side is the good and white one, which was only acting defensively. And into that they happened to throw in the events of 1968.
Among the claims made in the Russia documentary was that outside of Prague, Czechs largely welcomed the crushing of the Prague Spring in August 1968 by Warsaw Pact troops. The Czech foreign minister described such a retelling of history as, quote, outrageous. Zaorálek also told Czech television that the Russian ambassador sought to downplay the significance of the documentary.
The ambassador reassured me that nothing has changed in the official Russian position on the events of 1968. He said, "Take no notice of this. It is all some film on television. You are attaching too much significance to this."
Analysts have suggested the documentary's assertions form part of a new line being pushed by the Kremlin, seeking to portray past Russian military interventions as justified and patriotic deeds, echoing similar sentiments put forth regarding the current intervention in Ukraine. Speaking to Czech television, Foreign Minister Zaorálek adopted a combative tone with regards to alleged Kremlin revisionism.
The Russians must know that in 1993 we signed a treaty of mutual friendship and cooperation between the Czech Republic and Russia. And this treaty begins with the words, "We seek a definite end to the totalitarian past, with the unacceptable use of forces against Czechoslovakia in 1968 and any further illegal presence of the Russian military on Czech territory." Dominic Yoon there reporting about Lubomír Zaorálek's protest to the Russian ambassador. Now, a centre mapping the history of the lesbian, gay, bisexual and transsexual community in the Czech lands opened in Prague on Monday. The new space, operated by the Society for Queer Memory, houses an exhibition about the history of the Czech LGBT community, offering personal stories as well as historical documents. Ruth Frankova spoke to Jan Seidel of the Society for Queer Memory and first asked him about the aim of the new centre.
We have three basic aims. The first one is to have a space where we can familiarise the public with history and memory of the LGBT people in the Czech context. The second aim of the Centre of Queer Memory is to serve as a study room for scholars interested in studying our archival sources. And among these sources, I would say that the most interesting item are the transcripts of biographical interviews that we have with elderly LGBT people. And the third aim is to serve as a space for meeting of elderly LGBT people who, as they tell us, often feel in their advanced age a feeling of loneliness, for example, when they have lost their partner, and that's why we want to offer them a possibility together with their friends on a non-commercial basis.
With the opening of your centre, you also launched a new exhibition. Can you tell me more about that?
Yesterday we opened an interim exhibition of LGBT history and memory, which will be open to the public one afternoon a week in the initial stage of our activity. We call it interim exhibition because our plans are to have a more solid exhibition, for example, the next year. But in this interim exhibition, we present the results of researches in the past of LGBT people in the Czech context.
You chose the date of the opening, the 1st of June, on purpose. Can you tell me why?
Yes, it is because the 1st of June is the day when, in 1868, the first attempt to decriminalize the homosexual intercourse in the territory of the nowadays Czech Republic was done. At that day, on the 1st of June 1868, an anonymous author wrote and sent a letter to the prominent Czech physician of that time, Jan Evangelista Purkyně, and in this letter he described in a very touchful way the condition of homosexual people and asked Professor Purkyně to act in favor of the decriminalization of the homosexual intercourse. Purkyně had the letter published in the Review of Czech Physicians, so that's why this unique historical source has been preserved up to date and is the first evidence of an attempt in this land to fight for improvement of conditions of life of non-heterosexual people.
Jan Seidel explaining the goals of the new memory centre to Ruth Frankova. And we stay with Ruth for this week's feature in Focus.
With the tourist season in full swing, Prague is swarming with visitors admiring its historical sites and monuments. But the city has more to offer than just its culture and history. The Academia Publishing House recently released a rather unusual guidebook of the capital. Entitled Divoká příroda Prahy, or The Wild Nature of Prague, it offers a completely different perspective on the city as seen through the eyes of two passionate naturalists. When I met with one of the guidebook's authors, Radek Mikuláš, I first asked him to define the term wild nature.
It's a nature that develops spontaneously, without human intentions. It can happen on mountains, it can happen on rocks, but it can also happen in the city. And it happens much more often than usual people presume.
You are a geologist by profession. What led you to write this unusual guide?
During my geological research on walks in Prague, just for refreshing, I found a lot of plants and a lot of fascinating pieces of nature, and I wanted to understand that. I asked my colleagues botanists for such a book, and they told me that nothing like it exists. There are essays, and there are some scientific papers on it, but there is nothing for usual people who live in such nature. So I began to pursue Jiří Sádlo, who is a renowned botanist, to write that book. But Jiří Sádlo didn't agree, and he contacted me with Jan Albert Šturma as a possible co-author. But Albert was not willing to write the whole book, so finally, I agreed to learn something more about the plants in the city and to join as a co-author of texts and also author of all the photos which are in the book, because Albert, the co-author, didn't make so much photos, but he has perfect drawings.
And the drawings are also included in the book, a few of them.
Yes.
What is the aim of your guide? What's the main purpose of the book?
Well, to show the people who noticed this nature in the city, to give them an explanation. What do they see and what the perspective of that, and whether there are some rare species or whether it's all common, whether they came from different continents or how did they spread on train lines. It's a common way of spreading of neophytes, of new vegetation and so on. So either to explain or just to show the nature to people who don't pay attention to that.
At the beginning of your book, there is a small map with the most interesting points worth seeing, and then they are described in greater details in individual chapters. How did you classify the different types of landscapes or wild landscapes in Prague?
Well, first there is a map where some 50 places are put and they are briefly described. And then some 20 of these places are described in a form of, say, personal talk or personal experience of either me or Albert or both of us if we were all together on the place. And the classification is given to some extent by the order of the chapters. Each chapter describes some specific settings, let us say Prague underground. It means canals or artificial caves or old mines and so on, which exist in Prague and still are inhabited by bats, let us say. So this is one of the level of classification. At the end of the book, there is also about 50 specific vegetation types. For example, there are savanna growth with bush grass, Calamagrostis epigaeus, and staghorns you make, Rus typhina. So these two plants make the base of the community. And there are also examples of, say, minor size. On pavement margins, there is a common purslan, also known as pigweed, which is eatable. I didn't try, but my co-author did and survived.
That's great to know. So in times of hunger, we know that there are edible...
It's a big benefit of the book, I guess. After the future collapse, it will be useful.
Actually, the very first chapter is written by you, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Wandering Through Prague's Primeval Forests. Are there really any remains of primeval forests in the Czech capital?
Well, there is no really primeval forest in Prague, but there is something which can easily be called a primary forest. Primeval forests usually are understood to continue from medieval and even older times of the human history. They should be untouched by human activity, human management. But in Prague, some forests develop spontaneously on the ruins of the city, on a place where the human intentions were lost. Ruins or abandoned parks or abandoned gardens. There are many possibilities. And once again, these places were covered by vegetation from zero, factually. And then this vegetation developed to a forest growth. So this is the primeval forest of Prague.
Talking about forests, one of the Prague forests that you mention is called Milíčovský High, but that has a slightly different history because, if I'm not mistaken, that was sort of artificially made when they were building one of Prague's biggest housing estates, Jižní Město, and they brought those mounds that were dug out, and on those artificial mounds they planted the forest.
You explained it more or less well. In the beginning of 1990s, it was concluded to make a so-called forestry restorations in this official language. But in practice, it meant that each bush or tree, which was superfluous in garden center, was probably taken and planted out on the dump in thousands of seedlings. And there are rare and nice and expensive varieties aside the most common ones, together with species which come from the surrounding settings, and nearly everything survives and is flourishing. It's a miracle, because if you make such a great collection of species on your garden, it would be probably pretty difficult to keep it. But there is no care in the Milíčov dump, but still everything is vital and flourishing.
What's your explanation?
It's a good question and difficult one. probably the combinations are so much unusual in comparison with normal nature that there is not so much competition.
You also authored another chapter called Prague, a Salt Lake City. What part of the city reminded you of that place?
10 years ago, I saw this great salt lake in Utah. And after that, some years, I found the water reservoir in Praha Hostivář, which is several kilometers long. And then it was emptied and desiccated. And on the bottom, there were deep cracks in the mud and thin salt crusts. So it is the similarity with the Great Salt Lake. And there was a strange mixture of plants with salt-preferring species. We found carcasses of large fish, Asian grass carp, about 1 meter long. And we found also shells of a tropical red-eared turtle, which doesn't appear normally in the nature of the Czech Republic, but probably terrarists or aquarists are unhappy because these animals eat a lot and they grow a lot, so they probably gave them freedom in the reservoir.
And then they actually survived
many years probably, and the last information I got is that they even were able to breed. So it might be a great danger for fish because they eat fish eggs and they eat small, just breeded fish. So we will see.
You also mention places which are right in the center of Prague, such as Uhelný trh or Karlovo náměstí. What kind of imprints of wild nature can be found there?
It's chiefly a topic of my co-author. But Albert considers the paving of the Uhelný trh square, which is in the historic city center, to be continuously vegetated with disturbances, of course, but with the continuity for hundreds of years. Plants resistant to trampling, like thyme leaf, sandwort, can survive. There is a market, so there has always been a source of nutrients for plants and a lot of people as well.
At the end of your book, there are several supplements, and one of them is this chapter called Prague Nature as Seen from Trams. In this respect, what is actually your favorite tram line?
Probably number 17. It's a tram line that goes from the southern part of Prague in Modřany, then it crosses the city center and ends at Ládví, which is the northern margin of Prague. And these parts, like former fields in Modřany or old limestone quarries at Bráník, are places I know from my childhood. Then the tram crosses the center riverbank of the Vltava, and finally, at the north part of the city, the tram crosses steep slopes with remnants of maybe 80 years old colonial houses in Troja and Kobylisi. So it's not only botanic remnant of something old, but it's a social remnant.
What I like about your guide is that besides giving sort of detailed description of the different locations that you describe, it's also very poetic, and the individual chapters are divided by koans, by short stories or statements which are used in Zen practice. Who is the author of these koans? Who had this idea?
The koans were written by Albert Sturma before we started to work on the guidebook. It was one of the texts he gave me just to incorporate somehow to the material we have. The koan, as one text, it is not a description of botany, it's a description of emotions which a perceptive person can have face to face with bushes or plants of the city. So finally, I divided the text into a dozen shorter texts that divide the main chapters now.
Finally, as you point out at the beginning of your book, wilderness is in nature something that's sort of changing. And I wonder whether all the places that you have described in the book are actually still there, because as you said, it's something that keeps changing and dying out and then appearing somewhere else.
Well, some places we described have already disappeared. An old factory in Šerbohoj was broken and replaced by living houses now. Or the water reservoir with turtles was filled again with water. But on the other hand, as quickly the wild nature of the city disappears, it reappears on different place again.
Co-author Radek Mikolaš speaking to Ruth Frankova. If you've any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely pleased to hear from you. But from me, Chris Johnston, that's all for now, and thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.